our guest in the studio today, Brandon Cho. And good morning, Brandon.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's our pleasure to have you here. This is your second trip to Spokane.
Yes.
And you are playing with the Gonzaga Orchestra this evening. Tell us a little bit about the piece you're going to play. Let's kind of get into it, just to establish what you're playing.
I'll be playing the Sinfonia Concertante by Sergei Prokofiev. It was one of his later works, Opus 125, and it was written for the cellist Rostropovich, who a lot of Soviet pieces during that era were dedicated to. And it's a really big, monumental masterpiece. It's the cello has a really an epic storytelling voice for 45 minutes, which is really supported and coupled by the orchestra part, and that's why it's called a symphony concerto. It's not only a solo part, but also big involvement by the orchestra. And it's, as you'll be able to tell, it's a lot of brutal elements that portray the cultural outlash and conflict between the regime and the people at that time. And a lot of Prokofiev and Shostakovich, their music was not allowed to be played because of this brutality and sort of making fun of the corrupt politicians and the nonsensical system. And but luckily we have this great repertoire and we're able to convey the deep heartfelt and emotional painful experiences from that era to now.
Right, right. If you're dealing with the music of Prokofiev and especially Shostakovich, I mean, there's just no way that you can decouple the politics from the music, because it's just all there. And we'll circle back to that piece. Let's learn a little bit more about you, however. And you did not start with the cello. You started with the piano.
Yes. I started with the piano when I was five, and I think I was very inspired by my older brother, who doesn't play the piano anymore, but he did for 11 years, and I used to sort of hang out by his feet, by the pedals, as he was practicing, and follow him and my mom to his lessons, and so I had a lot of music, classical music, running around in my head from before I even started practicing. Luckily, I switched to the cello after a couple of years, and my brother was able to accompany me in the early years, and yeah, it's been uphill since then.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you could have taken a different path and you and your brother could now be traveling around as a duo piano outfit. But what got you onto the cello track? Well, I guess the bottom line is, why cello?
I don't have that, like, miraculous moment of discovery like some people, but Of course, my parents wanted some music in my life, and I really liked the sound of the cello, this deep, mellow tone, and I wasn't that serious about it for several years, and then I started competing locally and nationally from the age of 11, I'd say, and I started to get, you know, good results and being really inspired to pursue this thing that I really had a lot of inspiration in. So my parents are not musicians, but they're very dedicated and supportive. So I had all the help I needed to go out and meet the right people. And
I'm sure in those early years that they considered it part of their duty and responsibility to make sure the practicing got done, even in those years when you were maybe a reluctant student every now and again.
Oh, definitely. My mother used to come to all of my lessons and video record all of them and very actively, you know, zooming in on certain things my teacher would point out. And then back at home, we would rewatch the videos and I would practice and pause the video, practice.
Oh, wow.
And pause.
All right. Well, good for her. I mean, that's a wonderful model for other parents who have semi-reluctant students on their hands. You mentioned about competitions and getting started with those at a relatively early age. I guess my question would be, did you get in early enough to have that just as a way of your operating? Because for a lot of musicians, just the whole idea of entering a competition is enough to make their blood run cold.
Yes, the word competition can be very sensitive for us musicians. I think it depends on your mentality and how you approach going into a competition. For me, it was very positive because it was sort of a set of goals every year or so for me to have this repertoire, that those pieces ready to go within, you know, a 1 or 2 week period. And it can be very cutthroat depending on who you're around. But for me, I made a lot of friends actually through the competing process, and it was always a very sociable and positive experience going to a competition, meeting people. And
yeah, that's really good to hear, that there is an element of camaraderie that certainly can be a part of these things. Along the way, have you found any other performers who have become kind of cello heroes for you? And if maybe not even that exalted, but a player who you look to as an example of the art?
I would definitely start with Rostropovich. Well, thanks to him, we have so many more pieces in our repertoire that we can even play. I mean, we're able to express a lot more through our instrument thanks to him and the precedents that he set. And one of the living cellists that I really admire is Yo-Yo Ma, of course. I think hearing him and watching him play music, it's not really like he's even playing the cello. It's like it's sort of just coming out of him. It's so fluid, and it's all about communication, which I think is very inspiring and is very touching to the listener. And the way he just takes over a room when he walks on stage and performs, I think is something that I strive for a lot of the times.
Have your teachers ever, and the answer is probably yes, so that's kind of maybe an obvious question, have your teachers emphasized to you the singing quality of the cello? And if so, what does that mean to you just in terms of the way, first of all, that you produce the sound?
Yes, it's there's a lot of elements of vocal elements in string playing, I would say. And I think a big part of that is actually the cello, they say, is the closest to the human voice in register. I'm able to listen to a lot of singers baritones, tenors, even sopranos, and really think specifically about how they approach a big shift or how they involve breathing. That's a big aspect of how to think of phrasing and, and what's natural to for the inflection after you take a breath. And so it's very connected to singing and this lyrical quality. And the more you feel that connection throughout your whole body as you play a string instrument, I think the closer you can get to that really deep, soulful lyricism.
Nicely put. I'm talking with Brannon Cho, who's going to be soloing with the Gonzaga Symphony Orchestra this evening at 7:30 at the new Myrtle Wolson Performing Arts Center on the Gonzaga campus. Kevin Heckmatpona is going to be conducting the orchestra, and it's going to be quite the spectacular thing. We do have the Symphony Concertante by Sergei Prokofiev, with which our guest Brannon Cho is soloing in, but as well on the program, these are not small pieces. The Overture Die Fledermaus by Johann Strauss, also the Three Dances from The Bartered Bride by Bedřich Smetana, and getting us kind of back to the politics of the situation, Shostakovich's Festive Overture, written after the death of Stalin. And, of course, the story with Sergei Prokofiev is that he died on the same day as Joseph Stalin did. And that, you know, he lived in the shadow, obviously, and this even deepened the shadow because his funeral was rather sparsely attended and hardly noted because the big guy had died. Do you find a real affinity for Russian music, for cello?
Yes, I've been exploring a lot of the Russian repertoire since I was young, and I think it matches the sonority of the cello very well. This one of my teachers talked about how the history of Russia is reflected in Russian music, and of course it's a deep and long and bloody, conflict-full history that has gone through a lot of brutality, ups and downs with regime changes, and
but also stylistically, because it started off, Russia was just so isolated for centuries and centuries, and then gradually opened to the West, and so it's you can hear. And correct me if it's not your impression, but especially in some of the earlier works by the early Romantic composers, you can hear much more of the folk element, although it's certainly there in the 20th century composers as well.
Yes, absolutely. I think, for example, in the music of Tchaikovsky, of course, there's this deep soulfulness, but there's also this incredible imagination of fairies and this wonderland soundscape that he's able to create. And I think that's very connected to the literature and the sort of the culture that was in Russia in the 19th century. Of course, that's also reflected in his ballets, and it's you can feel a lot of that in, for example, like if you read Dostoevsky or Tolstoy, there's this really historical way of storytelling, and it's really emotional, and there's this weight that you can feel with Russian art and culture.
Right, right. It is a unique animal. That is absolutely for sure. If you had to send yourself off to a desert island with just a couple of, a handful of pieces that you could play And of course, there'd be an orchestra that would and pianists who would migrate with you. So, you know, you wouldn't be all alone, but you'd still be on this desert island. What are the pieces that you currently play that you would definitely take with you on that journey?
Oh, well, I don't know if this is because I'm playing it now, but of course, I think as a cellist, I would take the Prokofiev.
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm,
a
sure.
really highlight of the cello's history.
Mm-hmm.
I think beyond that, I'm a huge fan of chamber music.
Mm-hmm.
I play a lot of chamber music, and I think that's some of the best repertoire ever. For example, Beethoven's string quartets, especially his later ones, Opus 130 or 135, for me, is just such a staple in art in general.
Well, I hope you have lots of chance to play Beethoven in the next year.
Yeah.
Given the big anniversary that's coming up. And the other question, I guess, is more or less the flip side of that is, I'm sure that you played the Dvorak?
Yes.
And the Elgar?
Yes.
Okay. Are there any pieces that you're kind of saying, I really want to perform these, but maybe not quite yet?
Well, primarily, as we talked about, the doing all six Bach suites in
mm-hmm.
one performance
mm-hmm.
is a goal, but much later down the line, I think would be a little early for me right now. But beyond that, I'm a huge fan of Strauss's Don Quixote, which is a tone poem with basically a huge solo cello part
mm-hmm.
and a big viola part as well. I would really love to perform that special piece with a really top-notch orchestra, with the really conductor that I know very well. And that would be a really highlight of my life.
Oh, absolutely.
Down the road.
Absolutely. Yeah. In the next few months, where do your travels take you? What's the literature you'll be playing?
In the next few months, I'll be playing some cello duets with my teacher, actually, in Germany.
Who is your teacher?
Franz Helmersen. Okay. He's a Swedish pedagogue.
And this would be a good point to drop in, that you have moved your base of operations now to Germany. You're living and working in Frankfurt and studying there, as well, you mentioned
yes.
your teacher. And it's how are you finding it? It's certainly different.
Yes. Before moving, I lived in Chicago for 4 years and then Boston for 2 years. So going from those big cities to I live now in a very small town outside of Frankfurt called Kronberg. And it's a very historical, beautiful German town with a castle from the 11th century, and it's feels very fitting to make music there. But it's completely a stark change from what I'm used to, and it's a very calm environment, very
mm-hmm.
perfect for practicing and getting work done. And the program that they have there is very free. They only have 24 students,
mm.
I think. So each one is sort of tackling his own concert schedule. So you can come and go whenever you need. And your teacher comes usually about twice a month, 2 to 3 times a month. And beyond that, you get to play for famous conductors that they bring in every month. Like, we had a masterclass with Christoph Eschenbach, which was really fantastic. Actually, I went through this Prokofiev with him, and just to have him conducting
mm-hmm,
next
mm-hmm.
to me was really special. And then also people like Gidon Kremer and Andras Schiff and Steven Isserles. The school brings in really great mentors for
us. Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, that sounds absolutely wonderful. And how long will you be there? Is this kind of an open-ended thing?
Yeah, it's very open-ended. Okay. It's sort of scary to think of where I'll be in a couple years. Technically, the program is 2 years, but you can really stay as long as you want. So, yeah, as of now, I don't know whether I'll stay in Germany for a long time or I might move back to
the States. It's up to you, and you have the time, and that's what counts. So that's really great. Brandon Cho, we wish you all the best, both in your performance tonight with the Gonzaga Symphony Orchestra. Again, it's 7:30 this evening at the Myrtle Woolson Performing Arts Center. And I'm sure that you'll do magnificently, and I'm sure that you'll inspire the orchestra to great heights in this one and have a great time together. And I do hope that your travels take you this way again sometime.
Thank you very much. It's all a pleasure. Right.